For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning and welcome everyone, many newcomers and five people who sat their first period of Zazen this morning, so it's very wonderful for all of us. I'm delighted to, I'm Tygon Layton, the teacher, the guiding teacher of Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, and I'm just delighted to be introducing my friend Myogen Steve Stucky Roshi, the abbot of San Francisco Zen Center. Steve is the overall abbot of San Francisco Zen Center, including San Francisco City Center, Green Gulch, and Tassajara Monastery, all of which I've lived at. But Steve also knows about small sanghas outside of that, having led a sangha in Marin for many years before he became abbot. And I feel really honored and pleased that the abbot of San Francisco Zen Center is here at our little Chicago storefront sangha. We are connected in many ways with San Francisco Zen Center through my training, and many of us have practiced there. So anyway, thank you very much for coming, Myogen.
Good morning. Let me welcome you also. Wherever you are, you have an opportunity to take responsibility for the place you're at. And so from that place, you can welcome everything. Right? So although this is my first time here, I'm taking this seat, and from here, welcoming everyone to this place at this time. So since five people were here sitting the first time, and I'm wondering how many people are here for the first time. I know there's a whole group of my old friends here taking up space in the middle of the room, so I can't see the people back there. I should just mention that my own pilgrimage right now brings me to this spot, but 1971 I left Chicago. I guess I haven't been back since until now. I was living on the north side with some of these people here and back there, who we called ourselves the Other Cheek Commune, which comes from turning the other cheek. And you can guess which cheeks we were referring to. And I had started sitting Zazen then, and I thought I should go and find a good place to continue and deepen my training. And so I traveled around the country, ended up at San Francisco Zen Center for quite a while. And I think some of the impetus and the energy that we were expressing with our communal life back then in the 60s and 70s is still sustaining me, actually. And I think some of the sincerity that we were bringing to what we were doing, it was playful and at the same time very serious. And I think we learned a lot. And for me, it was kind of like, okay, it was like a little seed. And then I burst out of that and have been wandering around and finding my own way ever since. But it's been great for me to reconnect with some of the people. And yesterday, day before yesterday, Tygon and I went and I got to discover for myself why there's something in Chicago called the Bean. And it's also called Cloud Gate. I couldn't imagine what could be called Cloud Gate and the Bean. And of course, when I saw it, it was instantly revealed and instantly made sense. although there were no clouds day before yesterday. Yesterday there were clouds. So in thinking about coming here, I felt very happy. Taigen invited me to come to Chicago sometime. Actually, he's been inviting me for a while. And this year we found a found a date that worked for here and for me. And then we were on the phone, said, what do you want to talk about? And I came up with the thought of talking about generosity. So if you leave the room and wonder what I talked about, it was generosity. So here I'm very happy to be generously receiving and giving this water life. It doesn't mean that the water doesn't already have life, but it means that there's a generative process. So each action, including, say, each moment of consciousness, generative action. Generative action is, so it comes from the same root. The word generosity has the same root of our other words like genesis, genes. The root gen actually comes from Sanskrit, Indo-European root, means to generate or to beget. So there's a sense that I want to talk about today of generosity being a place of origin, a place to start, a place of beginning. And I think this is the motivation for people, fundamental motivation for people to come here and sit down, find a place to begin. And to begin sometimes means you need a place to stop. Find out where you are. Stop, find out where you are, then begin. But the stopping itself is a beginning, because it is a returning from whatever is going on in, say, a busy mind, to realizing that to see what's going on, one needs to clarify that mind, clarify this mind. So there's a great teacher who we celebrate in this particular lineage, the Soto Zen lineage, Dogen, Eihei Dogen Zenji. And Dogen, spelled D-O-G-E-N. Dogen means the Do is way, as in Tao. And Gen means source. So his very name means way, source, but the source of the way, right here. So I'd like maybe each person just take a moment to stop, feel your own body, feel your own breath. This is your source. Expression of way, source. So I'm always humbled giving the Dharma talk. There's nothing actually that you don't already have. Still, it's sometimes helpful to offer some words I hope that many of you have opportunity someday to give Dharma talk. It's quite an honor. And Dharma means truth. Sometimes means law, but it's law just in the sense of the way things are. So how to point out or point to the way things are, or the way it is. So Dogen offered some teaching in an essay called Four Methods of Bodhisattva Guidance. And the four methods of bodhisattva guidance refer to how to actualize the vow of a bodhisattva. So the vow of a bodhisattva is to cultivate wisdom in oneself and cultivate, wisdom in the sense of liberation, of freedom from suffering, and to support that in everyone, in all beings, and to put other beings ahead of oneself, even to support the cultivation of wisdom and compassion and freedom in everyone, and being willing to generously give that opportunity to everyone. So these methods, he says methods, say approaches or practices. He said practice is something that one actually takes up and does. So he mentions giving as the first one, and then kind speech, and then beneficial action, and identity action. So these four, I think, are great kind of approaches to consider how to live a true life. True living is really the intent of giving. So if you look up giving, or if you look up generosity in Wikipedia, and you go down to the bottom, there will be another reference that says dana. And dana, spelled D-A-N-A, dana is a Sanskrit word meaning giving. And so we have, and then you can click on dana, and then it'll give a whole, it's kind of essay on a Buddhist understanding of giving, generosity. And it will include a couple of little stories of the previous lives of the Buddha. One of the previous lives of the Buddha, there's a story of the hungry tigress. And the hungry tigress was so hungry, she had these cubs to feed, but she went out hunting and hunting and couldn't find food for her cubs. So she had this dilemma of how to... She knew that if she let herself starve to death, that she wouldn't be able to feed the cubs and they would die. So she actually was beginning to consider eating one of her cubs to sustain her own life so she could continue living. And the Buddha, in a former life as a monk, came by and saw the dilemma of the tigress and offered his body to the tigress to feed the cubs. So this is reminiscent, I think, of the Christian notion of the sacrificial lamb. But this is also in Buddhism, this notion of giving, giving to oneself, one's body completely. So very interesting, I think, this notion of complete giving. How do you actually let go of what is usually a sense of possessing one's own life and one's own body and one's own identity? So Dogen says, dana, giving, means non-greed. It's an antidote to greed. I think there's current research done that if you practice letting go of your attachment to things, you actually kind of change the cells of your body, brain, and begin to generate enzymes contribute to more and more feeling of generosity. So very important practice for us to sit down and be willing to notice how one is grasping at things. And when you notice that you're grasping at things, what's it like to open that grasping? What's it like to not grasp, to not be greedy? What's it like to sit still and notice little tendencies to want something different? Oh, I want something different. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want these thoughts I'm having. I don't want this pain in my knee. And to have the mind start strategizing, you know, how to get something. So we have the practice then, it's letting go of that, coming back to breath-body awareness. So the practice of giving, one of Dogen's statements in his commentary on this says, to receive a body is giving. To let go of a body is giving. To receive this body is giving. Consider that. This is something to consider. Usually, we don't consider how this very body is giving space to the universe that wants to give us this body. And all the different parts of the body each have their space to generously sit still or to generously walk down the street and let every part of your body actually have the space that it needs. This is an act of giving. When Suzuki Roshi was in Japan after the war, he wanted to start a kindergarten, restart the kindergarten that had been destroyed during the war. So this would have been in the late 40s, 1940s. And he asked around. So he has the temple in, those of you who know Japan, it's in Yaizu, Shizuoka, which is right on the Pacific coast, a little bay on the Pacific coast, facing east across the Pacific. And so he consulted around, and he found that. So this is a story that's in the book Crooked Cucumber. Those of you who may want to read Crooked Cucumber, it's a life biography of Shinryu Suzuki, written by David Chadwick, who's one of our friends and student. So after the war, with this kindergarten project, he asked around and wondered, well, who could be a good teacher, a principal, head teacher? And someone said, well, there's this unusual woman over in another town that's really great, and our family knows her, and she's really great. So they went over. He went over with his friend, and so this person was named Mitsu, and she, at her school, was already at a school, and she came up and she saw this old friend of the family and this other monks there, and she said, "Oh, hello!" And the person said, "I brought this monk to introduce you," and she said, "Oh, is he looking for a wife?" She was pretty rude. That would be considered very impolite. But the friend said, "Oh, actually, no. Reverend Suzuki already has a wife." So these are married priests in Japan, and so already has a wife. But he's looking for a head teacher for his school. She said, "Well, I'm very busy here. I don't have any time to consider anything else." So she refused, and Suzuki Roshi decided that he thought that she was the right person. So every week he would come back and visit, and every week she would refuse. Finally, she thought she'd be really rude and said, "Yaizu is a fishing town. I hate fish. He still kept coming back. Finally, he said, please, would you come even come to Yaizu and just meet some people? And so she came. So she agreed finally to come. He was pestering her, and she finally gave up, came and visited, and met some people, and they basically talked her into coming and doing this, taking this job. As soon as she started this job as a kindergarten teacher, the head teacher, he said, well, now you have to sit zazen. And she said, well, you know, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm a Christian. He said, that doesn't matter, you know, it's better than not believing, you know, or not having any spiritual training. And so she said, okay, if it's part of the job, I said zazen. So we said zazen. And then he said, and then I want you to come and hear some talks. So there was this person, a scholar of Dogen, actually, who has come and into a nearby town and give talks. So this is, and after these talks, they were really obscure, and she couldn't understand what he was talking about. And so one day she said, I don't understand anything about Buddhism. Can you just put it into a few words? Can you tell me what it is that he's talking about? And he said, Suzuki said, it's to accept what is as it is and help it to be its best. So I think that's very key teaching of Shinryu Suzuki in this, in our lineage. And there's a lot of study actually involved in understanding what does it mean to accept what is as it is and then to help it be its best. But Mitsu put this into practice in her kindergarten and found actually things went better. If she accepted each child, each student, as this unique moment with this unique person, and then how can I help this one? With my own children, I know when they were young, I moved from Green Gulch and I was living in Mill Valley, those of you who know California at all, and I remember times I would be doing something. I would be doing something for my children, but they would want something else. Like I'm making pancakes, and little Hannah runs up and says, Daddy, Daddy! And my impulse is that, look, I'm busy, I'm making pancakes, I've got to get this breakfast together. She said, Daddy, Daddy! And so finally I took up the practice of, if I just give full attention for 1 second, maybe 3 seconds, but 1 second, if I could give full attention for 1 second, that probably would not burn too many pancakes. And so I took that, and I discovered that it made a tremendous difference to just give full attention. So, Daddy, Daddy, yes. See, I can snap my fingers. Oh, okay. Wonderful. Bye. Something like that, you know. And my own life became easier, actually, with that practice. So this is a form of a practice of generosity, giving full attention for one minute. Now, the practice of sometimes more is needed. There was a little bit in there of kind speech. Kind speech just to say, yes. But I want to read a poem that I brought from Galway Kinnell. Many of you probably know this poem. It's one of his more famous poems. This poem is called The Bud. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. for everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on the brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch, blessings of the earth on the sow, and the sow began remembering all down her thick length from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine down through the great broken heart to the sheer blue milken dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 tits into the 14 mouths, sucking and blowing beneath them the long, perfect loveliness of sow. So seeing this loveliness, seeing how beautiful is the sow with her little piglets, this is this practice of kind speech, of kindly telling the sow, oh, you're so beautiful. So beautiful. Sometimes people need to hear that too. You're so beautiful. You're perfect. Completely beyond comparison. So, again, this is the practice of Zazen, because sitting Zazen is to drop comparative thoughts. Noticing thoughts that come up, judgments, criticisms, regrets. Drop those thoughts. So sometimes it's helpful for you to say to yourself, oh, be happy. Kindly tell yourself, oh, I hold you in high regard. Who's talking here? This leads right into the thought of benevolent action, beneficial action. I see Lori's getting up to do beneficial action right now. Getting ready for tea. So that means I should stop talking?
No. But leave a little bit of time for discussion.
Okay, so what time should I stop talking?
10 or 15 minutes.
Okay. I've developed this facility to just keep talking. But I can also stop, so don't worry. So this beneficial action, anything that is beneficial action means that it requires an investigation into what is skillful. We have a Buddhist term called upaya, which means skillful means. Skillful means. So the one who's committed to the enlightenment, the freedom, the waking up of all beings, is continuously looking for how can I be more skillful? How can I be more skillful to help? So I think this also can naturally arise when you're paying attention. So skillful means depends upon, first of all, seeing. When I began sitting Zazen, my intention was to just see if I could clearly see the way things are. I'd been doing photography, and I had been working with what was in the frame of the viewfinder, and I noticed that it was very difficult for me to actually see what the camera saw. It really took a discipline to begin to look through the viewfinder, see what the camera was seeing, and then see what I thought the camera was seeing, and then take the picture and then look at it and see, oh, there's so much that I didn't see, and there's so much that I distorted, there's so much that that I misinterpreted, so much that was different from what I was thinking, that I was capturing when I was clicking the shutter. So those of you who are photographers may know what this is. A discipline that really takes tremendous a refinement of one's attention. But then I was impatient with photography, and I put the camera, and I began to feel that that was an interference. And I actually wanted to just meet what was in front of me without that. But then I have this ongoing practice and challenge of, okay, what is the bias? What is the perceptual bias that I bring to what I'm actually experiencing right now? So in Zen practice, we're always coming back to immediate present moment experience. What is this experience? To find out what that is sometimes means to, when you're in, say, in relationship with something, to listen to it. What I perceive something to be may not be what it's telling me. Whether that something is a rock or a tree or a person. As a gardener, for some years I've designed gardens. As a gardener, I wondered, what is this rock telling me? Where does it want to be in this garden? What's the conversation going on between this rock and that rock? How can I place these rocks so that they actually are in a true relationship? That they are actually respecting their own conversation. This may sound kind of funny. With plants, maybe we have a little more sense, oh, they're living, we think rocks are not living, plants are living. That's a usual mind, but from Zen mind, rocks are living. Rocks are moving. But plants are living in their way. And so how to listen to plants? Pay attention. So the attentive gardener is listening to the plants, seeing to their welfare. Seeing that, even being willing to take responsibility that some are weeds. Right? Big decision. Oh, this is a weed. Pull it out. But the weed doesn't go away. The weed, we return. It continues to nourish the plants. It's a mistaken idea to think we get rid of weeds. Where could they go? This is, you know, one universe. So when Dogen's talking about identity action, this identity action is more difficult maybe to convey, but identity action says, means non-dual mind. To know that when you are listening, talking, this in front of you is none other than oneself. That the same generosity that's producing this is producing that. So generosity then is coming from the totality of the interconnection of things. Every point is generative, and there's no particular point that's, say, privileged over other points in this wide and interconnected web that's producing right now everything in this moment. So when one is feeling generous, that means one is participating in this totality of giving. This totality of generosity. Noticing then that when there's some narrowness of mind, narrowness of closing down of one's heart, that then one is actually interfering with what wants to be generous. That what the totality of the dynamic world that is actually producing us right now wants to be generous. And at the same time generous without, say, privileging any part over another. So that means being ready to receive this body and being ready to release this body. Being ready to be born and being ready to die. Not interfering with this, with one's own small ideas, one's own desires and grasping at some particular idea. And seeing that, well, of course, we must have particular ideas and we must grasp at things. And so to acknowledge that and take it into account is also a practice of generosity. So yesterday, Taigen gave me, generously gave me a book that he wrote, which was little verses based on the writing of Dogen. So I looked up in your book the Bodhisatta Shiho Ho, which is the four Bodhisattva methods of guidance. So this is Taigen's verse. Giving Buddha to all being is giving to oneself. Speaking kindly feels good and helps improve the health. Doing deeds that benefit make everyone to see that in cooperation, there's no gap twixt you and me. Thank you, Taiyin.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening.
So, we have a little time now. We'll have tea and cookies after this for a more informal discussion. But if anyone wants to bring forth, to offer generously a question or comment for Myogen, we can take a little bit of time for a few of those. So please feel free. They're being shy today.
It's all right, I can wait. Sometimes it takes a while for a question to cook. Yes.
Hi. I have a daughter also. And
how old?
She's 8.
Huh.
And so I've been really struggling with whatever this kind of developmental change in her right now. Yeah. And so I haven't been very as patient as I've needed to be. So I was reading some, because for me it didn't work, I don't know. The one second thing I had to actually read about developmental changes in children and kind of the average thing. And that's what made it click for me. But to really take a moment and listen, and it takes longer than a second. And so to really sit and be patient and generous with her, and to also know, for me to learn that it's not going to be just like, oh, you look so pretty. Like, she'll see through that, you know, to really be truly generous with her. And not just, you know, kind of fluff, you know, to really take the time with her and to be generous. And so that's really been my goal, is to really, you know, and it seems like it was a little bit easier, you know, to do that. But now she's kind of struggling, you know, school and being a little bit older and kind of really taking on her looks and her, you know, and just being older and developmentally. And so it's been harder, but definitely since I've read some about the change and being patient with myself and more with her and being more generous with her and taking that time, it's been much, much nicer. I can definitely see the difference. And so I appreciate that when you said that with the pancakes, just like 1 second, you know, or just like, go away. But, you know, instead of just taking a second, just the minute, you know, or the second.
Yeah.
So I appreciate what you're saying. So thank you.
Well, it's good to use all the resources that we can, you know, that we have available. So understanding something about developmental phases may be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think part of our culture is somewhat, limited. I mean, there's a say, you know, the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, which villagers know, but in the fragmented culture that we're in, most of us are in today, there aren't the aunts and grandmothers often that are right around to also help, who would actually have more of the knowledge of those whole phases of development that younger parents don't necessarily understand. And so reading, you know, is a somewhat supportive to bring that perspective in. So, yeah, good. And it'll get more difficult. Yes.
How do you maintain generosity when someone's not being generous to you, or not telling you you're beautiful or accepting you for you? How as an individual do you maintain that kind of against negative thoughts, impression?
That can be pretty difficult. Yeah. It's hard to be generous when someone else is not. It's hard to be generous when one is being accused or blamed, something like that. I know. So first of all, to be generous with yourself right there is to acknowledge what your experience is, to give yourself the benefit of completely knowing your own experience right in that at that time. So that's actually, generosity begins right here. So if someone is blaming me for something, you know, I may notice, my body's getting a little tight. And to actually own that, acknowledge that. And I'm beginning to feel, I want to protect myself, you know, and so I'm beginning to notice that I'm internally beginning to construct defenses depending on the kind of the perceived antagonism that can come up just like that, you know, or it can be, and feel like, this is, now I'm being overtaken by my own reaction. So to take that into account is a practice in itself. And then how to work with the person, you have to take everything into account. What is this relationship? You know, is this person my boss? Is this person my supposed friend? Is this person my mother? Is this person my brother and sister? You know, the relationship makes a lot of difference. Some relationships you can actually acknowledge to that person what you're feeling, and they might be able to hear it, might be interested. But other relationships, no, they're not. They're not going to hear it, and they're not interested. So we have to say generosity includes kind of accurate, being realistic about the whole context, not having a particular expectation, and so then. Very, very trying to stay very close to this immediate experience. Okay, how to respond now? And sometimes it means I can tell this person that I'm having a hard time hearing them. Or I can run. You know. Sometimes running is appropriate. And sometimes stepping up and saying, okay, here's how it is for me is appropriate. But I say, most of us, they don't give ourselves enough, credibility and permission and generosity to really even notice what is happening. So I'd say, you know, I'm sure you have some specific situations in mind, and then that would be a whole other conversation. But so in practicing this practice, it's helpful to notice where one gets where tension comes up and where one finds one's own edge. And this is a very live practice that then you can take. Okay, how do I bring generosity to this? Is a question you can bring to your teacher. You can say, okay, here's, you know, I'm really limited right here, and I don't know what to do, you know. So sometimes it's helpful to get some guidance.
Along the same lines, I've been encountering people like that where their mind, they're just so into their mind, their mind is judging you, where you have done nothing. Even you come over to someone's house and just being yourself, very peaceful, and they start to judge you. They seem to be very unaware. I sort of try to do the best I can to be generous and try to communicate with the soul rather than the mind, and you can't. And they start judging you as to saying that what you're saying to them is gibberish. And I guess I just start to walk away. There's nothing I can do, but I love these people and I want to somehow bring them along or help them. Find it difficult.
Yeah. And to notice then the judging of the judge. What's it, what's my own mind doing? I know that I'm being judged, and so I'm beginning to define them as doing something to me. It may shift it a little bit just to say, I think they're just expressing themselves. Any expression, even someone yelling at me, feels like it's something being done to me. They're actually just expressing themselves. And every expression is an expression of Buddha's mind, amazingly enough. Even terrible things that are being done. Buddha's mind being completely impartial, you know, includes everything. So, for me to say, think, oh, okay, this is hard for me to hear this person expressing themselves. Can I find it in my own being to see how beautiful they are now? Begin there. Begin with, this is Suzuki Roshi saying, accept things as it is, and then help. First part we tend to overlook. Oh, accepting things as it is. I'm going to help right away. Because I actually don't want to accept things as it is. So we get into helping mode and trying to correct, which is actually a kind of trying to control and protect ourselves, usually before one actually even accepts, oh, this is what's happening. This person's expressing themselves. So it's and I don't know, it's difficult. This is very difficult. Transforming one's life is very difficult. Changing even your mind a little bit is difficult. Someone was saying yesterday, and the old us old people getting together and saying, someone was saying, after 40, you know, minds are hard to change. People get set in their ways, right? But for a bodhisattva, this is reversing that. As you continue practice, more and more, becoming open. More and more, noticing the tendency to get set and to hold on to a particular pattern, realizing that, oh, that's just a particular pattern. And I notice I want to hold on to it, but my practice is to let go and bring fresh mind, open heart, moment by moment, knowing that this has never happened before. This universe, this moment, has never happened before. Sure, there's some things that look like, okay, patterns, and our minds are trained to, you know, our minds are conditioned genetically to look for patterns. And so we need to do that, but at the same time, to realize, okay, there is another perspective. Just pure expression happening all the time. How can I participate? Not so easy. And you said you love these people. Yeah. So that's good. That's great. I love these people. And I don't want them to be the way they are.
I didn't say that. I realized these.
Yeah, it's good. There may be some feeling like that. Even among, you know, people who've been married for years. I love this person. And they just drive me nuts. Well, you know, I wish they'd just kind of get off this one thing a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Yogan.